Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
We want to give you another opportunity to ask your coronavirus questions to a panel of Boston doctors. You can call us with those questions at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK, or you can tweet us at Radio Boston. So joining us now to take those questions is Dr. Benjamin Linus, an infectious disease physician and associate professor of medicine and epidemiology at the Boston University School of Medicine. Dr. Linus, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Happy to be here.
And also joining us is Dr. Sandra Nelson, an infectious disease physician at Massachusetts General Hospital and an assistant professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School. Dr. Nelson, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you for having me.
And we are going to jump in just a second right into calls because they are coming in fast already. But I did just want to turn to the two of you for a minute. With cases, this is the New York Times, with cases surging in California, Governor Gavin Newsom has announced that he is going to roll back the state's reopening plan, saying today, he's talking about closing indoor operations statewide. That means restaurants, wineries, movie theaters, zoos, card rooms. Bars are going to be forced to close their doors entirely. That is an interesting moment because California seemed to have been ahead of us a while ago and then seemed to be doing better and now, of course, is in the thick of it again. How are you feeling about where we are in phase three? Dr. Linus, why don't you go first because you've been with us on this off and on since March.
Sure. I mean, I think it's upsetting news. I think it's probably shouldn't be surprising that this virus is circulating in our communities and no degree of shutdown will eliminate transmission to the point that if we go back to old behaviors and prior COVID sort of things that we do, the virus will come back until such a time that we have an effective vaccine and or effective clinical treatment. This virus is with us and we're going to have to, I think, be addressing it off and on throughout the time.
And Dr. Nelson, let me give you a chance to react as well.
I agree with Dr. Linus. I think it really points to the need for a cautious reopening. I think what we've done a little bit differently in Massachusetts relative to California is we've been slower in opening up segments of society. And I think we've been fairly attentive to some of the social distancing and other measures to keep things slow. But I do think we need to take every lesson from states around us and think about them as we contemplate how best to reopen. And I think it also provides good evidence that opening needs to be in both directions. We need to be able to open things up, but we need to be able to close them if trends move in the wrong direction.
All right, Drs. Linus and Nelson are ready for your calls. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Let's start with Nikki in Framingham. Nikki, what's your question?
Hi, yes. I recovered from COVID-19 on May 17th. And so but I heard about a couple studies from China and anecdotes in California that the antibodies are not necessarily lasting very long. So I guess I'm just curious, is it worth having antibodies tested? Or obviously I'm just being as cautious as everyone else as if I didn't have it. But so I'm just wondering if it's worth getting antibodies tested and what does this mean for vaccines if the antibodies go away so quickly?
Thanks for that, Nikki. And I'll turn to our experts. Who would like to answer that one?
I can take a first shot at that. I think it is true. We've seen that antibody titers decrease over time. But it's also true that the straight antibody titer does not necessarily correlate with immunity. There's other diseases for which the antibody titer might be unmeasurable. But if you're re-exposed to that pathogen, your antibodies spring back to life. That's one of the powers of our immune system. The truth is we don't really know yet what antibody means towards immunity. And so what I've been telling patients with whom I work is that it's good to know your antibody status. It can be helpful for public health purposes and for your own curiosity. But the danger is that I would not change my protective behavior based on my serology status. Just because you've had COVID, we don't know for sure if that means that you can get it again or what it means to future transmission. So keep up your guard.
We saw some reporting recently, and I'll get you the source on it in just a moment, of a physician saying that they had a patient who was essentially infected twice, and the physician did not believe that it was just a resurgence of the original coronavirus, but they actually got it twice. What do we know, Dr. Nelson, about whether or not that happens and how much of a risk that is?
I think that the reason that this is even discussed is because the test that we have measures viral material, but it doesn't measure live virus. And one of the things that we've noticed is that some individuals can continue to express some of that viral material for long periods of time, even when they're cured. And they can continue to have positive tests for weeks or months. And sometimes those tests are intermittent, meaning that they'll test positive, then they'll test negative, and then they'll test positive again. It's hard to know without knowing the clinical context for that setting. There are some inflammatory conditions which can follow an episode of COVID, which may mimic the original illness to a sense. But obviously, there are many other illnesses as well that look a little bit like COVID, other respiratory viruses. And so it's plausible that someone might have had an infection with COVID. It cleared. They continued to have a positive test, and yet their symptoms were due to another problem. So I don't think we have any really good evidence right now that in the short term we are seeing recurrences. But as Dr. Linus mentioned, we don't know what the long-term immunity is.
Okay. And just Vox.com was the source of that article. Let's go to another call, 1-800-423-8255. We've got Martha on the line in Lakeville. Martha, go ahead.
Yes, my question is, you hear on the media that testing is available for all and that you'll find out the results. My daughter's been sick and it was very difficult to get her a test. I was finally able to. And 6 days after, I'm still waiting for results. Why is that?
Yeah, Martha, that's frustrating. I'm sorry, and I hope your daughter will be okay. Dr. Linus.
I share your frustration. I can't answer you why that is. I think that I can say that the root cause for that is that we don't have a national strategy to roll out testing and contact tracing to control this epidemic in the United States. And that's a symptom of the fact that there's no strategy and there hasn't been for 5 months now. I share your frustration that now in June, it's still difficult to get a test. And even when you do, the turnaround time is effectively it's not workable. That's too slow to really make any meaningful decisions. And it's a problem that we really need to keep addressing because I don't see how we can control the epidemic without really having real-time information as to where we are. We're effectively flying without instruments. And you can see the result in the resurgence of the epidemic around the country.
Let's take another call, 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We've got Alex on the line from Lancaster. Alex, what's your question?
Hi, thanks for having me. I wasn't sure, with all the information coming out regarding clotting being one of the main causes of issues as a result of COVID, is there a chance that mild, like one glass of, say, wine or vodka could help thin the blood enough, even if in unsymptomatic carriers? Could that help at all?
So, Alex, are you concerned about blood clotting? Is that your question?
Yes, that seems to be the issue.
Let's turn to Dr. Nelson. Thanks for that question. What do we know about concerns about blood clotting, Dr. Nelson? And if so, is there anything one should do about that preventively?
No, that's a really great question. We do know that clotting is one of the complications of the inflammatory illness that goes along with COVID, and particularly patients who either have underlying risks to clot or or those that are hospitalized are higher risk of having blood clots. We don't in general recommend any preventative treatments for outpatients who are doing well, and particularly outpatients who have no symptoms of their infection. That just really hasn't been studied, and there are risks with any of the antiplatelet agents or other medications that are taken to avoid clotting. Certainly alcohol has many other effects, and I think the interface between alcohol and COVID is also not really well known. So I don't think right now anyone would recommend that as a specific means to prevent clotting. But it's important to note that that is an issue that's been seen in the patients who do get very sick with this.
And listeners, we were talking about testing a minute ago. Just so you know, we have a link to the Massachusetts Interactive Map of testing locations on our website at radioboston.org for your reference. Dr. Linus, you wrote an opinion piece saying that, it's complicated, but you are in support of returning to school in the fall. There is a lot there. But one of the things that you talk about is what we do and don't know about transmission with kids as carriers or spreaders. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure, happy to. I know Dr. Nelson has a lot of expertise in this field as well. The article was really focusing on the fact that we really have to make a decision about schools. We have no choice. We have to either reopen or not reopen, and either one of those things is a decision. And so really what we're looking at now is being forced to make a decision with uncertainty, which is uncomfortable, but something that we have to be prepared to do. And I argue that if you're making a decision under uncertainty, the best that you can do is to look at the data that are available and use them to make an informed decision while acknowledging that you could be wrong and being prepared to act quickly if you are. So that's what I propose in the article. And the data that I was referring to are data that are emerging from around the world. First, that it seems pretty clear that children, when they are less likely to become COVID infected than adults, and also that when they are infected, they have a much milder form of the disease than adults do. Further, if you look around the globe, there's not really clear evidence that schools are playing a major role in driving transmission in the community. I think that that, frankly, is uncertain. I'm not ready to bet the farm on that finding. And so that's why in the article, I propose that if we're going to reopen schools, that effort needs to be coupled to school-specific strategies for getting kids and staff tested and having the results come back not in 6 days, but within a day, such that it's an actionable time frame to do something and prevent another a cluster of transmission in the school. I think that's something that is feasible for Massachusetts, but would certainly take a lot of political will and a dedicated effort. And that's something that we're engaged with now, trying to move forward and affect change, because I do think that, you know, there's real harm to keeping schools closed. And the last thing I would say is that it is easy to cite back scary statistics that some children could die if we reopen schools. Of course, that is an absolute tragedy, and no one wants any children to die. I think that when reflecting on those data, it's also important to acknowledge the risks and the harms of not reopening, because those are real as well. And ultimately, we have to come to the right decision balancing those two things. I'm not going to stick my neck out right now and tell everyone what the right decision is, but I do think whatever your thoughts are, you have to acknowledge both sides of the decision, because it's a hard one.
And we will actually have further discussions here on Radio Boston. You know, school reopening is a big issue, and we will continue to follow it and have further discussions here. Dr. Nelson, we had a caller who got disconnected, and it was an interesting call. The caller said, I have been trying to find out whether or not coronavirus can be transmitted through cigarette smoke.
That's actually a really interesting question. We do think that that you can blow viral particles through other through, for example, wind instruments. However, there's filters within cigarette smoke, and some of the evidence thus far suggests that smokers may not actually be at higher risk compared to other well-established risk factors. I don't know if the answer to that is known, but certainly chronic underlying lung disease is a risk factor for doing poorly with coronavirus. And so it's certainly not anything that anyone's going to advocate as means of prevention.
Thank you for that, Dr. Nelson. And I guess as we wrap up, my question is, we know the long play is a vaccine, and we know there are even concerns about what vaccination rates will achieve and how effective a vaccine will be. So there's so much still left unanswered. For each of you, what is the most important next thing for us to be focusing on here in the Commonwealth? Dr. Linus.
Well, I think at this very moment, the most important thing to be thinking about is schools in the fall. I think that that's perhaps it's because I'm a parent, and so it's really preoccupying my thoughts, but I don't think I'm alone with that. And it's a major decision we need to make. It's a decision we need to be making right now. And it's also now is the time for putting new infrastructure into place for things like school-specific testing strategies. So in my mind, that's the question today.
And Dr. Sandra Nelson, what do you think?
You know, I share the overall sense that school reopening is really where our primary focus needs to be. And I would balance that by saying that really the best way that we can achieve you know, a safe school reopening is to continue to keep our rates of transmission in the community low. And so to the extent that we owe it to our children to get them back to school, I think we need to put all of our other activities in the context of how will that affect the likelihood that we'll be able to get them back? And will we be able to keep the rates of transmission in the community low? Masking has been shown.
I'm going to have to stop you there, Dr. Nelson. I'm so sorry. We're just the show's out of time. That's Dr. Sandra Nelson, an infectious disease physician at Massachusetts General Hospital, and Dr. Benjamin Linus, an infectious disease physician and professor of medicine and epidemiology at the Boston University School of Medicine. Thanks to both of you.